Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Russia's war in Ukraine is capturing much of the world's attention, but in Central Asia there is equal, if not more, concern about what's happening south of the border in Afghanistan. The Taliban have been in power in Afghanistan for nearly 2 years. The Central Asian government seemed to have reached an understanding with the Taliban in which the Taliban pledges not to allow any threats to their northern neighbors. But the Taliban do not have all of Afghanistan or the groups there under their total control. There are groups in northern Afghanistan that have the goal of toppling some of the Central Asian governments. Who are these groups and how are they operating in northern Afghanistan? To discuss all this, I am joined by Lucas Weber, a researcher focused on great power politics and transnational militant movements. He's the co-founder and editor of Militant Wire, and that's at the website MilitantWire.com. Lucas has written for many publications, among them CTC at West Point, Foreign Policy, Nikkei Asia, The Diplomat, and the Jamestown Foundation. Richard Valley, director of the research at the Islamabad-based research and news platform, the Khorasan Diary. Ricardo is an expert on international jihadist networks and militancy in the larger Khorasan region, particularly Afghanistan and Pakistan. And thank you both for joining me. This program is about Central Asia, so I'm interested in what's going on near the Central Asian border. So, Lucas, if I could start with you, what is the situation with militant groups in northern Afghanistan at the moment?
Well, we've had some interesting developments lately. It has reportedly involved both criminal organization or criminal networks and one unnamed organization. So a couple weeks back, it was reported that a top local security officer in Tajikistan was killed in a firefight with approximately six militants. Three were reported to have retreated back into Afghanistan, and three were detained. And the government said that they confiscated 45 kilograms of heroin, a Kalashnikov rifle with four magazines, night vision goggles, about $10,000 in cash, and other items. And prior to this clash with what they say were criminal elements, there was also reportedly an incursion by at least two members of an unspecified organization, and later a counterterrorism operation by Tajik security forces was conducted and reportedly killed two militants. So these two incidents, they're indications of a broader problem, a threat environment that has concerned Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and other Central Asian countries. And this is largely has to do with the lack of trust and confidence in the Taliban to secure, you know, the far northern reaches of their borderlands with Central Asian countries. And then also we have various groups aligned with the Taliban under their governance that have roots in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and also the Islamic State Khorasan province, which has, since the Taliban takeover, really institutionalized and expanded their regional outreach efforts to recruit, fundraise, and incite violence within Central Asian communities.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lucas. Ricardo, what are you hearing from Pakistan about some of these groups? I mean, how active are the, you know, Lucas just mentioned the Islamic State of Khorasan province, the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, Jamiat Ansarullah, it's a Tajik group. What do you hear in Pakistan? How active are these groups in northern Afghanistan at the moment?
Yes, so adding to what Lucas already mentioned about the network of jihadist organizations and militant organizations that are currently active in northern Afghanistan, specifically in some provinces of Badakhshan, Kunduz, and Jozjan, and of course Balkh, and Tahar, these groups have also Central Asian countries, Central Asian republics, recently highlighted here in Islamabad during an event on security, on border securities. The major threat that these groups pose is the destabilization of the borders between Afghanistan and such countries. Specifically, one of the major concerns for these countries regarding Islamic State and also Turkestan Islamic Party is that these groups in Afghanistan, in this northern region, have found a safe havens where they can recruit and amass weapons and carrying out attacks, both in Afghanistan, of course, this is their major objectives regarding the Islamic State Khorasan, but these Central Asian republics, their major concern is the spillover effect that they can come from Afghanistan. And in particular, one of the major threats that Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan also highlighted recently during this security meeting was the concern that the Islamic State of Khorasan, which is mainly active now between Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, has been able to actually recruit and manage the migration of several militants from Central Asian countries, specifically Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, into Afghanistan and vice versa. So there is the major issues of these commanders of Islamic State Khorasan, some of which have been recently allegedly neutralized by Taliban counterterrorism operation, one of the most important being in Balkh, in Mazar-e-Sharif, which has been constituted as a major center for the Islamic State in attracting such militants from Tajikistan and potentially sending them back to their original countries. And here I just conclude this section just by adding another point of view, which is the role that these countries, Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, plays in the broader strategy of the Islamic State, which is a double strategy. The first first strategy sees this country as a way to for the Islamic State militant to cross in other areas of the Middle East, first of all Iran, but also to proceed in the Middle East. And the second strategy is by exploiting these the destabilization, the mutual distrust between Afghan authorities and Central Asian countries along the borders to spark conflict and clashes along such borders, which is part of the war on borders of the Islamic State Khorasan and Islamic State in general.
Thank you. Let me follow that up, Ricardo. The Islamic State of Khorasan province, actually ISKP, actually claims to have carried out some attacks across the border, right? Not this year, but last year they did several times. Is this true?
Yes, exactly. There were two instances of attacks that the Islamic State carried out from Afghanistan, from Balkh province into Uzbekistan and into Tajikistan. Now, these claims have been actually, they didn't cause any casualties from Afghanistan, from the Islamic State, sorry, but they had a huge symbolic, they provided the Islamic State with a huge potent symbolic effect and propaganda boost to its own message, which is providing a platform to those groups in Afghanistan that are based in Afghanistan, in, first of all, the Turkestan Islamic Party and other Central Asian groups of Uzbek and Tajik origins, which now have been absorbed into the Taliban ranks under the Taliban command. As I was saying, the goal of this propaganda boost was to show such groups that the Islamic State can provide a platform for such militants of Central Asian origins to continue to wage their jihad into Central Asia, which in 2014-15 was a major problem for the Taliban, as we saw for the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, which was complaining that the Taliban were not, after spending 13 years fighting together in Afghanistan against US troops and NATO allies, they were complaining that the Taliban were not allowing these groups to wage jihad in Central Asia. Now, the Islamic State in 2014, they tried to provide such platforms, and now they are trying to do the same on a limited scale, as we saw on a operational level. But propaganda-wise, we can see that majority of the Islamic State propaganda, and on this, Lucas is the real expert, so he can expand on this. We can see that majority of the propaganda of the Islamic State is produced in Afghanistan is actually produced in Tajik and Uzbek languages.
Thank you. And that's a perfect way to transition over to Lucas. Lucas, I know you've done a lot of work looking at the propaganda that the ISKP is directing toward Uzbekistan and Tajikistan. Could you tell our audience something about that?
Yes. Well, actually, Bruce and I wrote a paper for GNet, which I recommend you go and read. And we actually talk about the strategy of how the ISKP is seeking to appeal to, in this paper, we're looking at Uzbeks in particular. And one of the ways they're doing this, they're trying to poison the waters amongst Uzbek supporters of the Taliban. And they're going through their organizational history and lore, and they look at how the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, factions of it, joined ISKP in 2015 for a number of reasons, and then were eventually decimated by Taliban forces. And they use this, and they tell of how the Taliban didn't just stop at IMU militants. They actually killed their wives and their children and their extended family as well. So they're trying to portray the Taliban as hostile towards Uzbeks. And then another thing we covered in this particular study was a new kind of trend where they started running biographies of ideologues and fighters from Tajikistan or from Uzbekistan who they're trying to make martyrs, and they tell of the achievements and the influence they've had on contemporary ISKP movement, and they portray it as obligatory that you follow in their footsteps, because if they can do it, there's no reason why you should be sitting on the fence and watching as this hostile Taliban force is cracking down on Uzbeks and Uzbek jihadists. And they've also institutionalized Central Asia-directed media outlets under their Al-Azaym Foundation propaganda apparatus. And this has provided translations of ISKP propaganda, official IS central propaganda, and original propaganda that's seeking to appeal to Uzbeks and Tajiks. And they're saying, basically, as Ricardo mentioned earlier, the Taliban have these Central Asian jihadist groups on a leash and they're being restrained. Meanwhile, we launched a rocket attack against Uzbekistan last April and Tajikistan last May. So we're the ones who are really fighting these tyrannical Central Asian governments. And one last thing that's very important to put this all in context is that most of the primary external Islamic State Central Asia focus was on Iraq and Syria around the emergence and height of the caliphate. And then there is still some focus on, for instance, Central Asian IS families in camps in Syria and the poor treatment they're receiving. But overall, and this is something we noted on Militant Wire quite some time ago, is that the primary external focus has quite clearly shifted to Afghanistan amongst Central Asian supporters. So this is a big shift.
I don't suppose there's any chance we have any idea how many people are, how many recruits they're getting off of this, do we?
Well, it's hard to put a number on it. However, there has been reports by the Taliban of a number of Tajik and Uzbek fighters being killed. Some of the biographies that they put in their Voice of Khorasan magazine have been recent. Some have been IMU from a couple of years back. But also when Ricardo and I and my colleague Laith Al-Khoury, we've been tracking the internal discussions of these Central Asian groups, and they have actually reported Taliban operatives infiltrating their Central Asian networks linked to ISKP. And this led to the killing of, which is what ISKP announced, but for some reason, the ISKP on official channels announced, but ISKP's official channels didn't for some reason. But one of the up and coming charismatic Tajik ideologues was actually killed, by their account, by a Taliban mole, and then they put out a bunch of propaganda and wanted posters looking for the mole afterwards. So we know that the biographies we see coming out of ISKP on these Central Asian militants, it's not limited to this, and they seem to have quite a robust contingent within ISKP. And I think ISKP using its limited resources to produce an abundance of media in both Tajik and Uzbek shows that this strategy is worth the resources and time put into it and is showing results.
Okay, thank you. I got another question. I want you both to comment on this. I'll start out with Ricardo. What does the propaganda say about the governments in Central Asia that they're targeting? It seems to be the Tajik and Uzbek governments. What do they say on these social networks? Ricardo?
So when it comes to Islamic State Khorasan propaganda, we have to differentiate between, as also Lucas was mentioning before, between official and unofficial channels. So if we look at official channels, propaganda against the Central Asian countries, it depends on the moment when this propaganda is published. So, for instance, going back to last year, middle last year, when the attacks against from Afghanistan into Uzbekistan and Tajikistan occurred, we saw a full-fledged media warfare directed against Central Asian countries, which eventually transitioned also into propaganda against China, trying to connect Xinjiang province, East Turkestan, to the broader Central Asia struggle and within the province that the Islamic State would like to create, the Mubarun Nahr province, the land beyond the River Oxus. So in this official propaganda, and especially Khorasan Ag magazine, Voice of Khorasan, and to a limited extent also the Arabic language magazine, South Khorasan, we saw that the usual propaganda against these Central Asian countries revolve around mainly two main topics, which is about the authoritarian characteristics that these governments often display, and from one side, and on the other side, which is strictly connected, the so-called un-Islamic character of these countries, according to the perspective of the Islamic State. So, on a second level, the unofficial channels, we see, especially the Uzbek and Tajik channels, the propaganda against such countries, of course, it continues throughout all the years. And basically, this is more specific propaganda, which not only lashes out against the governments, but also against specific individuals within such countries. So now I just to give an example, there are several sermons from Islamic State propagandists and scholars who issues legal decrees, fatwas, against Islamic scholars in Uzbekistan, try to undermine these scholars and outlining them as potential targets within Uzbekistan. And this is something that we see in Afghanistan and in Pakistan on a larger scale, of course, when the Islamic State local channels outline scholars which are seen as enemies, their own enemies. So they are trying to send their provide a legal basis for assassinating unfortunately scholars in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, whether they are Taliban or from other sections of the societies. But we can say that on this level, on this second unofficial level, the propaganda from Islamic State is much harsher and virulent than the official one, because it's more pervasive and it addresses specifically populations from Central Asian countries in Central Asian republics and also in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
I find the part you just said about the Uzbek clerics interesting, because Bruce and I have actually just started discussing a campaign by pro-ISKP channels targeting Tajik clerics in particular. So maybe that's something we can talk about after the show. But adding to what Ricardo said earlier, we also saw specific topics such as after the rocket attack into Uzbekistan, pro-ISKP Uzbek channels, which are now officially part of ISKP's media apparatus, were talking about how the Uzbek railway that's running through that's planned to run through Afghanistan into Pakistan is actually a plot by Uzbekistan and the U.S. to bring democracy into Afghanistan. And the Taliban is said to be involved in this. They accuse them of being essentially mercenaries that are fighting ISKP on the Uzbek government's behalf. And also after the rocket attacks, pro-ISKP channels in Uzbek started talking about how, like we see, gas and oil pipelines targeted in Egypt's Sinai region, in Mozambique, and elsewhere, that Chinese pipelines in Central Asia should become a target as well. And yeah, they really represent the Central Asian leaders as tyrants and of puppets of the U.S., Russia, and China.
Okay, thank you. We're talking about militants in northern Afghanistan who pose a threat to Central Asia, and my guests are Ricardo Valle, Director of Research at the Islamabad-based research and news platform The Khorasan Diary. Ricardo is an expert on international jihadist networks and militancy in the larger Khorasan region, particularly Afghanistan and Pakistan, and Lucas Weber, a researcher focused on great power politics and transnational militant movements. He is the co-founder and editor of Militant Wire. And again, that you can find that on the internet at militant, capital M, wire, capital W, one word, .com. And thank you both for being on the program again. Okay, we've been talking a lot about Islamic State of Khorasan, and we might get back to them, but I don't want to neglect some of these other groups in there that are have closer ties to the Central Asians for a long time. We mentioned at the start the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, for example, and they are considered allies of the Taliban. What is their situation inside Uzbekistan at the moment, Lucas?
Well, we know there are still Uzbek groups with cores from the IMU in Afghanistan, but it's much like the Turkestan Islamic Party and other kind of ethno-linguistic jihadist groups. The Taliban has essentially denied their existence, and this has been uniform for Al-Qaeda, the TIP, IMU, and others. And one interesting thing is that there was a RFERL report in July 2021, and they were talking about how Jamaat Ansarullah, the Tajik Taliban, as they're sometimes called, their fighters were tasked with controlling the border areas, and it is said that their core was made up of opposition fighters from the war in Tajikistan in the 90s, and they're also linked to the IMU, Al-Qaeda, and the Taliban, and Central Asian, or Tajikistan in particular, is worried because of their long border. And as we saw with the two recent incidents mentioned earlier, that these groups, though the Taliban seems to have put them on a leash, and because they want foreign investment and humanitarian aid, given the economic and humanitarian issues they're facing, they do seem serious about not wanting Afghanistan to become a launchpad for international terrorist organizations. And this is a promise that they've been making even when they're in negotiations, peace negotiations, prior to taking over Afghanistan. And interestingly, for instance, another sign of this was the Chinese government said that the Taliban actually pledged for the first time publicly to contain the Turkestan Islamic Party. So you can see that the Taliban is kind of reeling these groups in a bit, but Central Asian states, just Tajikistan, et cetera, they just don't have the trust and confidence in the Taliban to perhaps catch rogue actors or those who go off script and decide to launch an attack on their own, even though their groups have had pressure from the Taliban and probably from their own leadership as well, falling in line with the Taliban's dictates. So I think there's still a risk that some of these elements aligned with the Taliban could attack, and there are certainly concerns that they will do so. So, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lucas. Ricardo, feel free to comment on the Islamic movement in Uzbekistan or Jamiat Ansarullah, and I would like to hear your views on that. But you were the one that brought up the Islamic movement of the Eastern Turkestan Islamic movement, excuse me, it's the Uyghur group that the Chinese are worried about. So if you could tell us something about that, them too, and what's happening with them.
Yes, absolutely, Bruce. So I would just like to, in addition to what Lucas has brilliantly outlined on the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, I just wanted to add two additional details on these. One is very recent on a political level. The Taliban today, Muttaqi, the acting minister of foreign affairs, said that making a comparison with the previous Republican government of Afghanistan, he claimed that especially on the issues of security, the current government has held a positive positive developments with the government of Central Asian countries. So compared to the previous government. So there is, as Lucas was mentioning before, the Taliban are willing to, apparently, at least publicly, to restrain the actions of such groups like the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan. And another issue related to these on a political level is the fact that while repeatedly Taliban officials, like today also the active Prime Minister Marwi Abdulkabir, recently appointed by Abdullah Khunzada, the supreme Taliban leader, Marwi Abdulkabir and other Taliban officials repeatedly claim that the Taliban government is inclusive of all ethnicities and groups part of Afghanistan, whereas we know that many Uzbek and Tajik, especially Uzbek and Tajik officials, not to mention the Hazara ones, have repeatedly complained that the Taliban are confining all power into the hands of a restrictive elite. And just 4 days ago, Abdul Hamid Khorasani, one of the top Taliban commander, Tajik Taliban commander, from Panjshir province, he resigned from his position as a governor of one of Afghanistan's districts in Paktia region, claiming that the local of Taliban officials, the other local Taliban officials, were preventing his faction from taking actual decisions within the administration of the districts and the neighboring areas. So this is just to say that there is what Lucas was outlining before, these distrust, growing distrust within certain segments of within the Taliban along ethnic lines. And this is exactly what the Islamic State have tried to exploit in its propaganda. And connecting to your questions on the Turkestan Islamic Party and its situation now between Afghanistan and Syria, on an official level, we see that the Turkestan Islamic Party has been mainly silent when it comes to its presence in Afghanistan, although we know that they are active and they have been put under strict control by the Taliban government. And we know that they have been incorporated into Taliban units where Taliban officials can keep a close eye on them. Whereas we see a huge propaganda and the media activity when it comes to the Turkestan Islamic Party branch in Syria. And the interesting fact is that while the Taliban are trying to downplay the presence of all these Central Asian jihadist groups in Afghanistan, the Islamic State last year, towards the end of last year, and then again in January, for the first time, they directly addressed their Turkestan Islamic Party, openly calling on them to join the Islamic State to carry out their armed struggle against the Chinese government in East Turkestan. Now, when it comes to the Turkestan Islamic Party and like on a capabilities in Afghanistan, they have been severely reduced by the Taliban government. But at the same time, we know, and this is also the concern that has been expressed recently by Central Asian countries, we know that there are training centers where fighters continue to train. And ultimately, we have to look to the connections between all these groups that are between Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asian countries through the lens of the jihadist ideology. So all these groups ultimately have pledged allegiance, yes, to the Taliban supreme leader, Hebatullah Khunzada, but at the same time, they answer to an ideology that he does not recognize international borders. Now, we can say that one of the major points that the Islamic State moves against the Afghan Taliban interim government is that they are trying to confine the emirate within Afghanistan. But ultimately, all these groups that find their legitimacy in jihadist ideology, they have the goal of spreading the Afghan emirate model also in their own country. So ultimately, in the medium long term, there is the high possibility that we could see these groups try to make their move once the Taliban have consolidated their power in Afghanistan and can provide they can support these groups on a covert level. And there is also, and here I conclude, there is also an additional political issues that we have seen regarding specifically Pakistan, but it's the same when we talk about Central Asian countries, that the Afghan Taliban, by harboring these groups, they have a potent leverage that they can use against neighboring countries. So we saw this with Pakistan and the TTP, because the TTP, of course, it's the main threat to Pakistan and one of the major groups in the region. But the Central Asian countries, and the Taliban know this, they can suffer. They are exposed to the Taliban, who can use these groups as a political leverage on a security level against Central Asian countries, specifically Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, in primis.
Okay, and I got a question. It's for both of you, and I'll start with you, Ricardo. The Central Asian governments are counting on the Taliban to keep control of the country and keep these groups in check. But there are stories that actually the Taliban's policies against ethnic minorities is pretty harsh in some places. Is the Taliban losing whatever popularity it might have had in some of these northern regions among the ethnic minority groups who are Tajiks, Uzbeks, you know, and keeping in mind, of course, that there is a Tajik militant group from Tajikistan and northern Afghanistan and an Uzbek militant group from Uzbekistan and northern Afghanistan, too. Are the Taliban having problems in their policies toward ethnic groups in northern Afghanistan? And might that play into the hands of, actually more instability, but certainly some of the other militant groups like ISKP?
Yes, exactly. I think that you mentioned the most important point, which is that while personally, I think that the Taliban have a strict control at the present moment over these groups. But this is also because these groups themselves, they are waiting to see what is going to be the situation within the next 2-3 years. Because this is fairly... The Taliban have been in government for the last 2 years, which on a long-term perspective, it's not a lot of time. They have been governing Afghanistan. So these groups are also waiting for the Taliban to make their moves in this regard. So there is this double aspect to be considered. So I was saying that, of course, the Islamic State strategy is to lure these disgruntled militants who are not willing to wait or to follow the orders of their leadership, who has instructed to wait there for the Taliban to make their moves in the next months and years to consolidate their power. The Islamic State is trying to lure some of these disgruntled militants, leading them to join their own organization. And this is true for Tajik and Uzbek militants, but also for the Turkestan Islamic Party. But coming to the to the point of your questions, at the present moment, I personally don't think that we have no evidence that the Taliban are losing control of over these militants. Also, because of this particular detail, which is many of these commanders are not, and ethnic groups are not against the Taliban government, but are against the fact that the Taliban are not sharing the power of decision-making power with these commanders and local ethnicities. So the Islamic State also know this, and they know that this is a long-term strategy that they have been implementing.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ricardo. Lucas, I'd like to get your comments on the same thing.
Yeah, and I think that, for instance, we've seen ISKP essentially say to the Turkestan Islamic Party that the Taliban are, you know, they have you on a leash and they won't let you attack China, so you should come and join us. And then also a UN report actually said that I believe around 50, member states said that around 50 TIP members joined ISKP in the north. And I believe that, for instance, it is easier to for the Taliban to unite all of these disparate ethnic elements when they're fighting a foreign invader. And we are seeing some rifts that are reported on occasionally that, you know, there is some discontent. And ISKP has looked to exploit this by portraying the Taliban as an Pashtun-centric organization that discriminates against other ethnic groups. And also, ISKP's campaign against the Turkestan Islamic Party, you know, competing for essentially the leader in the anti-China cause, this may have been the reason for the shift in doctrine that we are seeing from the Turkestan Islamic Party's media apparatus. And so their propaganda is now trying to promote them as not an international terrorist group. They don't want to target any countries, but they do want to liberate China. So this is kind of a way to do an end run around the difficulties they face by being restrained by the Taliban. They want to be a global Uyghur liberationist movement, and they're not an international terrorist group. This is the new line coming out of the Turkestan Islamic Party's commanders. So I found this very interesting, and they're using the ISKP's using the Pashtun-centric talking point to appeal to Tajik and Uzbek groups as well.
Okay, thanks. You know, unfortunately, we are about out of time. And I know this is one of those huge topics. We could sit there and spend days and days talking about this and what's going on. But I do want to thank my guests, Lucas Weber and Ricardo Valle, for being on the program. I recommend reading, if you want to find out what the situation is with militant groups, not only in northern Afghanistan and Pakistan or Central Asia, but really across the globe. You know, I recommend you read the Lucas and Ricardo's works, and you visit militantwire.com for information. A big thank you, as always, to my Middle East podcast producer, Nathan Shoemaker, in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Middle East podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week.